Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Thursday. It is November the 21st, a treasure chest Thursday here. Me, Mike Dettillier, hanging out with you until 7 o'clock. That's when Thursday Night Football will come on. We got the Cleveland Browns hosting the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I know you saw, Mike, that there's going to be a pretty good chance of very bad weather this evening in Cleveland. Some chilly weather, at least.
Yeah, Brad Evans, who's on with us regularly, he's reporting that looks as though they're going to get some snow for the Cleveland-Pittsburgh game. That's right up Pittsburgh's rally to play in that weather. We'll see how Jameis Winston vies. But he talked about possibly like an inch an hour of snow at the peak.
All right, so this isn't even light. This is heavy duty.
Well, I don't think he's talking about 1 inch throughout the game, but I think he said at his peak would be about an inch. So they'll be snowing in Cleveland. So, man, you want bad weather, go play in Cleveland. Hey, man, it's never great weather there.
When you see that, and you also Lambeau Field today, they had a camera showing the snow coming down there. That's kind of funny when you hear the weather report here of a cold front coming in.
I don't know how people would react to all that over here, man. You know, man, they can't drive in good weather, much less bad weather. So I get it. But, it looks as though they'll have some wintry kind of mix tonight for the Browns and Steeler game. And I think the odds makers kind of put that forward. And when you look at the over and under and that the Steelers are only a 3.5-point favorite tonight, you would have thought after what you watched last Sunday with Cleveland, it might have been a little bit more than that. But again, I think they're figuring that possibly the weather might be involved in that.
We might have a cold front here too, folks, but nice and warm inside the Treasure Chest Casino. Come hang out with us leading up to Thursday Night Football before that matchup in Cleveland. You can sit down, place a bet at the FanDuel Sportsbook. We are right next to it here at the Game Bar and Grill inside the casino. They also have the Alder and Birch Steakhouse, the Lakeside Cafe. Plenty of places to eat, gamble, have some fun while you kill some time here at the Treasure Chest Casino. And also, the best part, plenty and plenty of parking.
Yeah, no question about it. Man, they got great food here at the game, too. So if you want to watch the game, man, they must have about a dozen or so TVs here. You can eat supper here. If you want to place a little bet on one of the games this weekend or tonight, already had a couple people walk over. But hey, what you like tonight? Man, I mean, you might not want to take my pick on all this.
I was going to say, do you get a consulting fee on all this at least?
Yeah, right.
Looking at today's lineup, Mike, we got Chris Lowe coming up after the first break. He's an ESPN college football writer. We'll be breaking down stuff in the SEC as well as the rest of the week in college football. 5:20, who dat? Pay attention. We're going to have Dome Patroller, Pat Swilling, Saints Hall of Famer, joining us. I'll talk about the black and gold. No, he was at the last game against Cleveland. We'll get his thoughts on the season so far and what lies ahead after this bye week. 5:45. pick six. We'll be making our selections on some of the top games in college and the NFL. Like Mike says, I don't know if you really want to take our advice.
I think I did okay last week.
620, voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair, joining us as the Bayou Bengals get ready to take on Vanderbilt, hoping to snap their three-game skid. And then 6:30, a little bit of a special guest. I'm going to mix things up a little, talk some rock and roll with football with Felix Heinemann, bass player and keyboardist from Zebro, be joining us before we get into Thursday night football.
Yeah, man, I was talking to Felix, and the first time I went, here's Zebro play. Bobby saw him before I did. He was at the Yellow Banana. He went watch him there on the bayou.
I was going to say, I do not know the Yellow Banana.
Oh, well, it don't exist no more.
Oh, okay, gone.
Oh, yeah,
ain't
yeah.
Ain't there no more.
Oh, yeah, it ain't there no more. And but I watched Zebra, and Felix was part of that. And, you know, Randy Jackson, who's from Raceland, and Guy Gelso, they were all together. And they played at the old Lighthouse in Thibodaux. He's like, Mac, I remember that. I remember playing there. He said, that thing burned down, didn't it? I said, yeah, it sure did. He said, you were there that night? I said, oh, I think I was, but I didn't have nothing to do with it, though.
Love those small, intimate venues. I'm sure it wasn't anything too, you know, huge of a place,
man,
right?
There was a couple hundred people there. It was packed like sardines in a can that night. I guess the statute of limitations didn't pass. I wasn't even 18 years old in there. And neither was Hebert, and neither was Coach O. But, you know, they got bigger fish.
You three together, I'm sure, was trouble. You might have been starting the fire.
No, they had bigger fish to fry that night, so to speak. But, yeah, man, I listened to him so many times, and I'll ask him about it. They got to play at one of the great venues, a Whiskey a Go-Go.
Oh, yeah.
And out in Hollywood.
That's
man.
Awesome.
Man, growing up, that was a hopping place. That was happening back then.
That venue's got to be still around, I would
imagine. Yeah, yeah. Okay. I think they played last year.
Okay.
There, and, you know, we'll talk about it. You know, they've been together, the same three dudes, 49 years. 49 years.
That ain't able to do anything for that long.
Because you think about it, you know, man, I've been around guys that played in bands. After a year and a half, man, I hate playing with these guys. You know, I'm going on my own, and it breaks up. It don't last long, but, man, Zebra, and they'll be playing tomorrow night at the Fillmore in New Orleans at 8 o'clock. And so I'll be there tomorrow, and Cannon will be there Saturday. I think two ladies decided that we shouldn't be there at the same time. There might be some issues involved. So, no, but I'm going tomorrow to hear and go talk to Felix and Randy and Guy a little bit before the show. And then Bobby's going Saturday. He got a autograph session tomorrow in Chicago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's all excited about that. All he got to do is sign that name.
Might be too cold up there for the Cannon.
Oh, no, but it's going to be short. He know how to wear a coat.
We're going to take a break here. We're at the Treasure Chest Casino. Sports talk roll until 7 o'clock, and then we'll be carrying Thursday night football action between the Pittsburgh Steelers and Cleveland Browns. When we get back, some college football talk with ESPN senior writer Chris Lowe right after this. Stay tuned on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. We are here at the Treasure Chest Casino. Sports talk run until 7 o'clock tonight, and that's when Thursday night football takes over between the Browns and Steelers. You can catch that right here also on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Right now we're going to get to a little college football talk. For that, we welcome in Chris Lowe, ESPN senior college football writer. How you been doing, Chris?
I'm doing great. It's always good to be with you gentlemen.
Chris, listen, before I ask you a football question, I can get this confirmed. Miss Coco said if you want to come back down to Louisiana, she's willing to cook for you.
Only as she cooks her, she makes her gumbo, and her world famous fried shrimp. Tell her I'm there on the next flight.
Yeah, man, she best shrimp boulets, man, you'd ever
world
eat
famous.
In your life. No, I'm telling you, you could ask Chris, man, that's good eating with Ms. Cook. Chris, I'll let you know next time. How surprising is it, Chris, this far into the season, and you see all these teams in the SEC sort of all stacked up, and they're going to have a couple teams left out. I mean, you can't take everybody in that final 12. I would think at the most four at this stage and see how it rolls. You know they're not going to let Texas and Georgia and Alabama out of there. I think the roll will be, do they take Ole Miss or Texas A&M at this you know, particular genre. But that would mean Tennessee, I think, would get left out. So your thoughts on how it's played out this season in the SEC?
Yeah, Mike, I think the way to get to five teams is if Notre Dame loses to Army or SC next week in Los Angeles. I mean, that would open up a spot. Notre Dame will not get in if they lose another game. I'm pretty confident of that. And that would open up another spot, which I think would be one of those two lost SEC teams. I mean, I'll be honest, man. I thought the SEC the last, I don't know, 7-8 years, as good as it was and as many times as it produced the national champion, sometimes two teams in the playoff or two teams playing each other. Mike, I thought it was pretty top-heavy. It was Bama, Georgia, Georgia-Bama, and, of course, 2019, LSU had that unbelievable team. But you didn't have, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8 teams that you felt like on any Saturday, if things went well, depending on who was healthy, could win. Well, this year it's been like that in the conference. I mean, it's been topsy-turvy, man. And you've seen Arkansas beat Tennessee. You've seen Vandy beat Alabama. You saw Florida beat LSU last week. You know, you saw Kentucky going to Ole Miss and beat Ole Miss. This has been more of a – there's been more carnage, you know, in the league this year than we've had in the last several years. And that's probably going to work against the SEC when those final selections are made. I still think, though, there's more carnage to come, not only in the SEC but outside. I bet you there's at least two outcomes in college football over the next 3 weeks, counting conference championship weekend, that none of us see coming.
What we watched last week, and you watched Georgia, they may be the scariest team that you would have to play. You know why? Carson Beck, he was El Sucko for most of the year. And then all of a sudden, last week, man, that's the guy I thought we'd see to start the season. He was terrific throwing the football. Man, if Carson Beck gets on track, Chris, they got a lot of teams that's not going to want to see Georgia on that schedule.
It was almost like the twilight zone for me, Mike, because I was with Georgia each of the last 2 weeks. I was in Oxford the week before, and then I was in Athens last week. And they looked like two different football teams. He looked like a different quarterback. But I think, to me, the secret sauce for Georgia last week is they played up front offensively as well as they played all year long. They protected him. He had a clean pocket. How many times did you see a lot of guys in his face against a really good and deep Tennessee defensive line? He had time to throw the football. They started a new tackle. Georgia hasn't started. I think they've started several different combos in their offensive line. If they get that type of play up front and give him time to throw the football, I mean, I agree. I think if you brought in 10 coaches from around college football, maybe some current, some former, and you said, all right, give us the four teams in order right now that you at least want to play right now in a football game on a neutral site, I think Georgia's probably one or two. I think Ohio State's up there, probably Oregon, maybe Alabama, but certainly Georgia's in that top one, two, or three. And I agree with you. They're a team, certainly if they can stay healthy, that people are going to want to be part of in December. And hey, think about this. They're probably going to have to go on. Someone's going to play them in that first round at their place. And if they win, then they're probably going to get the 3 seed, the 4 seed at their on the road. They're going to have to go on the road and play maybe an Oregon, a Miami, somebody like that. So one of those teams that gets to buy, the reward's probably going to get to play Georgia.
Chris, you close by and have watched what Coach Lay has done at Vanderbilt. And, I mean, that's amazing of how they were able to. Now, last week, they caught the buzzsaw. Now, sometime you saw and sometime you catch it. They caught it with South Carolina, who is another hot football team. And I still don't see how LSU beat them. I mean, that was a cluster of events for that to happen. But tell everybody, because LSU plays Vanderbilt this week, the strengths of that team, I mean, they got a guy at quarterback. He's the straw that turns the drink for them. They play aggressive on defense. They run to the football. His specialty is certainly on the defensive side, the football. But this is a relatively young Commodore team other than the secondary.
Yeah, it is. And I think the thing that Clark's done better probably than anything is he's been able to bring key pieces into the team, like a Diego Pavi at quarterback and some other positions. He overhauled that entire program, Mike, strength, conditioning. He brought a new OC to call plays. He's calling defensive plays. And there's a lot of belief there. And they played what I call old school throwback football. They keep the ball away from you, man. It's just hard to get it. And they don't turn it over. They only turn it over six times all year in 10 games. So when you're able to be in third and one, third and two all the time and keep the football, you got a quarterback in Pavia who really is like a street brawler, man. You just don't want to get mixed up with that guy. When it's third and short or fourth and short, he's going to figure out a way to get the first down. And they keep the football, 8, 9, 10, 11 plays. They don't turn it over. They're sound on defense. I was at the Texas-Vandy game. I saw that game live. And Texas clearly has better personnel. They got better skilled people. But I was blown away, Mike, how well Vandy tackled in space. You know, and their ability, you know, in one-on-one situations, you know, being able, you know, when you get out to the boundary and a guy's got speed and some shape, how their defenders were able to get guys on the ground. Now, you know, they haven't done that every game, but most of the games this year, certainly the games that they played the best in, they've been able to do that. You go back to the Alabama game, to the Texas game, they played a hard schedule. They played South Carolina. That Tennessee game in 2 weeks, a lot of Tennessee fans are worked up about the rankings and the Vols not been in right now. Tennessee better worry about Vanderbilt in 2 weeks because that game's in Nashville. I think it's a noon game, 11 a.m. Central Time game. That will be a chance for Clark Lee and Vanderbilt to really put a bow on what's been a terrific season there in Nashville.
Chris, when you know, we cover LSU here, but from the outside looking in on what's happened to this team since halftime of the Texas A&M game, because we saw improvement defensively from this team, and then all of a sudden it was like a cheap suit. I mean, it peeled off you, and I mean fast. And we've seen this team sort of in free fall since the Alabama game. I mean, the only time they was in the game was when they kicked off. Other than that, that was it. I mean, Milroe, when he's going to go in the College Football Hall of Fame, those two games he played against LSU, that would be on the reel for me. And then, you know, you look at Florida. I don't think Florida's very good. What does that tell you about LSU? That LSU moved the football up and down the field. Settle for field goals, not touchdowns. From your perspective, what has happened to this team since that halftime of the Texas A&M game?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of it is making, I want to just say big plays, Mike, but decisive plays, key plays, guys on offense and defense. And that's where LSU, you look at all the guys they've had come through there the last few years, they've had those guys on both sides of the ball. And for whatever reason, they've not been able to do that. And I think the other troubling thing about LSU is when you get to the second half of the season, that's when you start to see what I call quality depth come to the forefront. Kids that have developed and been developed. Maybe guys who weren't, you know, frontline players the year before. Maybe guys who had not gotten a lot of snaps and they've had to step in for people who got hurt. Or you just need to play more players because it's a lot of part of the season. And I don't think you've seen enough of those guys step into the forefront. Now, it's damning on a lot of fronts. I think on the staff, on those players, on their ability to sort of build that depth and be ready to go the second half of the season. Because in the SEC, man, when you get to November and you've been beat on the way you are in that league, it ain't your first 22, Mike, and you know that better than anybody. You know, it's who have you developed or who's sort of stepped in, who's come on. Maybe who's been a guy that you thought wasn't ready that's all of a sudden gotten ready, and I don't think they've had enough of those guys come forward this year as they've gotten in here to the latter part of the season.
Chris, curious your thoughts on if you think that head coach Brian Kelly is that guy to lead this Tiger team back to the promised land. Obviously, fans here reeling right now, very disappointed in a team that looked like they should be making the College Football Playoff this season, but that's now off the table. Can he get things turned around going into next year?
Well, Brian might have won. He might have won too quickly there. His first year, they get to the went to the SEC title game. And of course, last year, I mean, it's a, I guess, damn if you do, damn if you don't. They had the Heisman Trophy winner, but they're not really able to capitalize on that as far as being a playoff-type team. But I, listen, the guy's proven. You know, he won at Notre Dame. He's coached a long time. I think you got to be careful, especially in the SEC, after three seasons, after two seasons, and I know what happens, to point to a coach and say, well, he's not the guy. You know, we're going to go get somebody else. Well, who are you going to go get? You know, who is that guy? You know, who is more proven than Brian Kelly? And so I would warn, I guess my warning to LSU fans right now is you got a guy who's won at a high level, who understands what it's like to coach in a fishbowl. He was at Notre Dame. Now he's at LSU. But, yes, you also have a right as a fan to say, this ain't it. This is not who we are. This is not our standard. We got to recruit better. Maybe you got to play the portal game a little bit better, the NIL game a little bit better, but certainly improvement next year. And when I mean improvement, being a playoff team, I think will be a very realistic expectation for the Tigers next year. If that's not the case in year four, then yeah, I think there's some serious soul searching to do by the LSU administration and Brian and his entire staff, because it's not like he hadn't made changes. You know, they would spend a lot of money bringing the new defense coordinator this year, but $2.5 million. So they've been invested to do those things and make changes on the staff, but sooner or later it's going to translate on the field.
Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss, everybody in the offseason, every Ole Miss fan, man, this is the year. We got our shot here. And not only to get into the top 12, but to win, and because of what they have on the defensive front, which is really good, Chris. Man, I don't remember Ole Miss's front seven, especially what they have with that defensive lineman, as good as what they have right now. For Lane, and you're getting Trey Harris back healthy, this is his opportunity to, for all the guys that want to take a shot at him, to prove that, you know, hey, listen, we belong with the big league guys this year. But it all has to do with what they've got on defense.
No, they've never been, Mike. I don't remember a time that Ole Miss has been this good, this deep up front in their front seven. Certainly their defensive line. But they went out and paid a lot of money in their NIL. And I give them credit. You know, we talk about a payroll of around $13 million this year. And much of that was spent on front seven guys on defense. And you saw that. You saw the value of that against Georgia. They dominated that football game a few weeks ago. Now, after a bye, they got to prove that they can sustain that against a team that I think is dangerous in Florida. You got to play at their place, the Swamp. But no, he's always scored points. They scored a ton of points since he got there. They've thrown the ball around the park. But the difference is, and he knew it. He told me when I was with him last week or 2 weeks ago, he said, I knew that we had to build a team that could beat Georgia because Georgia's the top dog right now. If we're going to do that, we got bigger, more powerful, stronger. We got to get pass rushers. You got to be able to bully the bully. And that's what they did 2 weeks ago. We'll see coming up, you know, if they can continue that. But they pitched all their chips in this year. You know, Dart came back for another year. You're right, Trey Harris, who is one of the better receivers in college football. You get him back healthy after missing three games. This will be, to me, a very telling game, Mike, when the Rebels go to Florida. Because if they go in and take care of business and look good again, because that would be about three or four straight games in a row, then I think they become that team in the playoff, because I think they will get into the playoff that nobody wants to play.
Chris Lowe, ESPN senior college football writer. Thank you so much for the time, as always, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
Okay, guys. Have a great night.
You too, buddy.
Appreciate it. Mike Dettelier, Steve Geller here at the Treasure Chest Casino, getting ready for Thursday night football, kicking off 7 o'clock between the Cleveland Browns and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Going to take a break. We'll be back with more sports talk right after this. Stay tuned or stop by the Treasure Chest and say hey. We'll be right back on WWL. Welcome back into sports talk. We were just talking about the LSU Tigers getting ready to take on Vanderbilt Saturday in Death Valley. Coverage will start at 2 o'clock. You can join Mike Dettelier and Herb Tyler for the Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger tailgating show. They'll be at the Acme Oyster House in Baton Rouge, presented by MAP Construction. Always a great time with Mike and Herb. Acme's got 16 surround sound TVs, drink specials, plus life's more fun with seafood, right? Catch LSU's pregame at 4:30. Kickoff with Chris Blair and Jacob Hester, 6:30. Tigers versus Commodores. That is 9 hours, folks, of LSU coverage. Saturday starting 2 p.m. on WWL and the Free Odyssey app.
They gave you some bad script there, Steve.
What you got?
No, we with Jeff Palermo because Herb's son's getting married.
Oh, congrats to Herb. So it's you and Jeff.
So it's me and Jeff Palermo. We'll be there Saturday from 2 to 4:30. Acme Oyster House on Perkins Road. We're about a mile from Tiger Stadium.
Right.
So we see everybody coordinating and supervising before they head to the big game over there. So come on by and visit. Jeff and I will be there from 2 to 4:30 this coming Saturday.
You're getting ready tonight for Thursday Night Football, Browns and Pittsburgh Steelers. Doesn't seem like a very exciting matchup tonight, Mike. But
Exciting for the Steelers. Right, I would want to play them after what I watched. After what I watched Sunday, I would want to play the Browns at this stage. Man, did the Browns look lackluster? Almost like they were flat as a pancake. Now, the Saints took it to them. I gather that. But, man, they didn't have a lot of fire in them. I will say that you wonder a little bit because remember we had Mary Kay on
Cabot,
last week, and she was like, you know, I was about 10 feet away from the owner, Jimmy Haslam, and he didn't look too happy. So, Mike, I would tell you that, you know, the coach maybe is okay, but not by the way the owner looked. No, Jimmy Haslam, he don't know how to spell patience. And he ain't. Now, he got all kind of money. Now, he's a $20 billion guy. But, man, you get him that's upset. And man, Cleveland ain't won much lately.
The issues they've had year after year after year with that quarterback situation, too, is just ridiculous.
No, but that's on him.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, he lit the fire under every owner by giving that guaranteed contract to Deshaun Watson. Whoa. Man, did he catch it the next owner's meeting. But that was his decision. They get into the playoffs last year, and they look like a team that was pretty good. Could Deshaun come back and play like the guy we saw with the Texans, where he was a really good football player?
Where's that dude gone?
Man, that guy I ain't seen again. I've never seen him play at that level again. Now, some injuries involved, but you can't tell me when you watched him, he carried the Texans on his back.
Absolutely.
And then you see this. He's a shell of himself as a player. Is part of that injuries, also part of that off-the-field stuff that's affecting him in Cleveland also.
Well, we can thank him a little bit because the Saints dodged the bullet for sure with Deshaun Watson not coming to New Orleans.
And they say that in Atlanta too.
Exactly,
I mean, it was close because remember, it was almost the entire NFC South. Carolina was interested.
Right.
Atlanta was interested.
Cleveland seemed to come in late.
The Saints were interested. And then it's almost like Secretariat coming from back the stretch. I mean, and, you know, and they catch them. But then you find out the details of the contract that every nickel guaranteed.
Oof.
You know, nobody else was going to do that at that stage of the NFL. Today, you see a lot of 70, 80% of contracts fully guaranteed. It's not quite like what it is in baseball and basketball,
right?
But it's moving inchingly close to that.
We're going to go to the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk in Texas. We got Jimmy and Gretna on the line. What you got for us today, Jimmy?
Hey, guys. Hey, look, let me give some love to the smaller programs. You know, I know LSU and Tulane gets all the credit. But, hey, UNO basketball is at Tulane tomorrow. First time in 8 years that we've played them. You know, I'm a UNO fan. We're playing them tomorrow, I think, at 6 or 6:30 uptown. So come on out. Come support UNO. UNO's really struggling, guys. Mike, you see, Mississippi College, they basically, they stopped their football program, I think, a day or two ago. UNO is having similar issues with enrollment and finances. They don't have a football team, but – yeah, UNO and Tulane tomorrow night in basketball. Of course, you got the Southeastern game and Nicholls State tonight. I'm going to hopefully try to stream that. But I wanted to get your take, Mike and Steve. You know, before the last LSU game, I know they've lost three in a row. You know, I saw the pundits and the commentators were saying Nussmeier is the fourth-ranked quarterback according to Mel Kiper's big board. Now, maybe that's taking a hit with the loss. And look, listen, let's be reasonable here. This is essentially his first year starting. You know, so PA's got a great arm, lots of talent, obviously injuries with the team, the running back Emery and Harold Perkins, they're on the field a lot because the defense has had some issues. It's a lot of pressure on Nussmeier. That being said, do you think that ranking's kind of high? Has it changed? And, you know, what's your take on that? Do you think Nussmeier is going to be back?
I never had him fourth. I mean, again, Mel has his own ratings, but I wouldn't have put him that high to begin with. And being a one-year starter, I think his dad is going to have some influence here. Former NFL quarterback. He's been a coach at the collegiate level, at the NFL level. He understands that. I think for him, he needs more experience as a starter. That's not his fault. Man, look who was starting in front of him, Jaden Daniels. So I think his dad is going to have a lot of influence on him, and it may be to return for another season. I hear a lot of people talk, let the freshman start. What? An 18-year-old kid? Okay, every once in a while it works out.
Right, everyone thinks that, you know, that you're Johnny Manziel, you know, just growing
up. Johnny was a redshirt freshman, too, right, when he did it. So my deal is I wouldn't be surprised that Nussmeier returned for another season at LSU. And I think the one individual that's going to have more influence than anyone, his dad is going to have tremendous influence on him on exactly what to do. And he knows, I think, like what a lot of people know, he might not be quite ready yet.
Yeah.
Get him some more starting time. If Jaden Daniels had left after his junior year, he's not the same guy. If Joe Burrow would have left after his junior year, he was not the same guy. They got that second year in as a starter. Look the difference it made.
That's a great selling point right there, Mike. Right there, I'd be like, all right, I hear what you're
okay,
saying.
Okay, I ain't Brian Kelly, but if I was Brian, he could hear me, I'd steal that.
Listen
Brian.
To Mikey Salford, right.
Coach Kelly, steal that one.
We are here at the Treasure Chest Casino at Sports Talk till 7 o'clock. That's when Thursday Night Football takes over. We are taking a break and be right back with more after this. Stay tuned on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Here with Mike Dettillier, Steve Geller till 7 o'clock when Thursday Night Football takes over between the Browns and Steelers. Mike, wondering if you saw today the press conference, New York Giants, Daniel Jones ended up having. It sure seemed like a somber goodbye to New York.
Yeah, that's about it for Daniel. You can tell they sort of
done with that.
Yeah, walk the plank. So they're going to be drafting early. They'll have him a rookie quarterback.
They had him running safety and scout team with the practice today.
That's bad.
Right.
That's really bad for Daniel Jones. And so, listen, the one thing when you're a first-round pick quarterback, you go get other opportunities in life.
Sure.
You'll get a chance with another team.
We're going to take a break for news when we get back next hour. Saints Hall of Famer Pat Swilling, Dome Patroller, will be joining us at 520 plus. Pick six. Get our picks for the weekend's games right here on WWL after the break. What's going on, everybody? Happy Thursday. Steve Geller and Mike Dettillier at the Treasure Chest Casino. We're at the Game Bar and Grill inside the casino. You can find us all the way in the back as you make your way through the table games, all the slot machines, and plenty of places to eat here as well as inside the Game Bar and Grill, as well as other restaurants to enjoy. We're also right next to the sports book. You can place a wager on tonight's game or any of the action coming up this weekend. And also, Mike, you know, obviously a game tonight. Going to be interesting in Thibodeau, the Riverbell Classic going on.
Yeah, all these cats that are sending me pictures of food they're eating over there. I mean, come on, they got me on this starvation diet, so y'all messing with me now. But, and it's funny, the last couple games that they've played in Thibodeau, Southeastern's won, and when they play in Hammond, Nichols has won. So I would put a little coin on cell phone.
So
the Lions.
No home field advantage.
No,
in this
not
matchup.
For this. Man, well, one of the coldest times I've ever been in my life to watch a game. It was a few years back. Man, well, I was on that sidelines at Nichols, and they had 13 guys in the huddle, Southeastern, on the first play. And Tim Rebo's brother, he's hollering at the official. And so, you know, we close to the sideline, so, you know, I hollered back at him. Hey, they got 13 guys in the huddle. So and he gets upset because I probably did have a foot on the white line.
Yeah.
So he was mad with me. So he come over, man, Mike Dettillier, what are you doing here? I said, no, I don't live that far away after that. You know, you want to make a big conversation with it. But, man, it was cold that night. And Chase Fourcade, Sully Lesh, they were on that team. And, man, Nichols beat them big. And I remember Go to Selfwood at the end of the game. Mike, he said, come talk to me after the game. And man, they had really blew him out. He looked at me after the game. He said, stay where you are.
I don't have anything to say.
I don't have nothing to say. But, man, it's a great rivalry between those two teams. They both sort of fighting for the same players in the recruiting process. Right. Man, Frank, I've known for a long – Timmy, too. Man, we go back a long way. But both guys have really been able to turn those programs around. I think about what Tim had a few years back and took over. And, you know, he's just done a great job there. This year, it's not – went well for him. And for Southeastern, a big win tonight here keeps them in the playoff hunt to maybe get an at-large spot, so to speak, when it's all said and done. And we talked to Coach Selfwood last night about it, and I was like, Coach, I hope you get to play one more game. He said, me too. You know, so, yeah, but Southeastern's really good this year. Got a dynamic return game. And, man, the Colonels have really struggled in the kicking game and also kicks, punts, coverage.
The series dead even, Mike. 35th meeting, and it's 17-17 right now.
It's like Saints Atlanta. We talked about it last night. It's crazy how it is. And the fact that, you know, over the last 6 years, it's been, you know, the home team has lost. It's been the away team
right.
That's ended up winning. So it's one of those deals. 6 o'clock tonight. So if you're in the Thibodaux area, it's at John L. Guidry Stadium. Just roll your windows down. Man, they got some mean cooking going on.
I know, you were showing me those pictures.
They got some mean cooking. So you just follow the smell, it'll get you right to the stadium.
Mike, seeing too on social media, Brian Kelly obviously just spoke to the media talking about LSU's matchup coming up against Vanderbilt. And Garrett Dellinger practiced today, but I think they're going to be making him a game-time decision because he is coming off of surgery.
Yeah, let's wait and see what happens with that. I'm surprised that he was able to practice. Now, he didn't tell you how he practiced, so
right,
to speak.
How he did exactly, yeah.
So I guess we'll find out a little bit more tomorrow. Man, Garrett, you saw, man – man, the young freshman steps in there. Oh, God, he was getting beat like a drum. It was really bad with him. And I would expect that. That's where you're going to exploit it, the center guard spot. The center, DJ Chester's in his first year at center, too. He had never played the position before. He was telling me that in the offseason, never played it before, Coach Hunt. But I'm learning. Well, it's been a big learning curve for DJ Chester.
Baptism by fire, for sure.
Oh, man, it hadn't been real good there. So, man, I know one thing. Garrett Nussmeier will sure like it when Dellinger gets back into the lineup.
We're going to take a break. Going to get back with a Saints Hall of Famer. And Pat Swilling will be joining us talking all things black and gold. Make sure you stay tuned. We're at the Treasure Chest Casino. Mike Dettelier, Steve Geller here till 7 o'clock. Being right back after the break here on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk, and some major news just dropping, Mike.
Whoa.
Dean. Adam Schefter reporting Bryce Underwood, ESPN's number one overall recruit in the class of 2025, is flipping from LSU to Michigan. He told school officials today.
Now, we've heard this rumor now for weeks.
Right.
That they had a $2 million-plus offer out on the table. Bryce says posted a lot of LSU stuff, which made you sort of think he was still going to keep his commitment. But, man, what a big day for Michigan first-year coach Sharon Moore and their Champion Circle, which is their fundraising organization to help NIL. That is a big get for Michigan. You watch Michigan play now, man, their quarterback situation is bad. And so for them to land Bryce Underwood, who had been a recruit for LSU since early this year, man, that's a big loss for LSU and a huge gain for the Michigan Wolverines.
We're going to get more into that, of course, later on. Right now we're helping to welcome in Dome Patrol legend Pat Swilling joins us here on the radio huddle. Pat, how you doing today, man?
Hey, I'm doing well, guys. But let me tell you, for $2 million, guys, you can flip me too.
Hey, Pat, I was going to tell you, this is an A-Bear line. I was born too early. Man, just think of all that money out there. But, Pat, just think of that. A young man, 17 years old, and he's got an NIL deal of over $2 million.
Whew. Hey, guys, how do you get these guys to go to school and you pay them that much money? I don't get it.
I don't get it either. I don't, Pat. And what control do you have now? because now you can see, you know, everybody, I hate to use the term, but everybody's competing with the Joneses of the world, okay? If somebody offers you 2.5 a year, then I'll give you 3. And you can see where this is going in college football. You better have a well-grounded young man that can handle. Pat, imagine you or I, and they flipped you $2 million when you 17 years old. How would you react to that?
Guys, I just don't understand it. From day one, I've always said it's not sustainable, but I don't know how I'll react. And, you know, the best thing about it, though, is, I mean, my mom and dad, I mean, I'd be able to help them a little earlier. But that is just a lot of money for a 17-year-old guy. I don't care how mature he is. I mean, I just don't see how they can pay these guys and expect him to go to school and do all the things you're supposed to do. Because at 17, you're still trying to figure it out. I just don't get it.
Pat, remember I talked to Coach O about this, and he was like, man, every year I would get up and talk to the guys about, okay, y'all getting this NIL money. And your girlfriend might forgive you if you cheat on her. Your mom, if you do something wrong, she might forgive you. Your dad might forgive you. But one dude ain't never going to forgive you if you forget about him, Uncle Sam. You best pay him, because if you don't, he's coming after you. And it was a great Coach O line about, man, listen, everybody can forgive you, but Uncle Sam don't forgive you.
Well, guys, think about the responsibility that comes with that as well. You got to go out and get it. You got to have an agent or somebody to help you with some of these deals, as well as you got the IRS to deal with. So that means you need a tax guy. And then you got all the hanging on guys who's going to be there as well. Man, that's tough for a 17, 18-year-old guy.
No question about it. Pat, I still can't believe this, man, because I really – and I'm not saying this just because you own. How you have not gotten into Pro Football's Hall of Fame is still shocking to me. And your name ought to be on that ring of honor with the Saints, too. I'm just telling you that, not because you're here. I've told you that before, that you deserve both honors.
Well, you know, the worst thing about it, I hate to say this, is – you know, and this is not a knock on Jari, and I want to say that because Jari deserves to be in, Jari Evans. And, you know, I was there Sunday and enjoyed, you know, him and seeing his family and all of that. But, you know, guys, it makes me really wonder, you know, what did I do? I mean, did I piss somebody off, or have I done something wrong? You know, I don't get it either. I mean, I got better numbers for the Hall of Fame as far as with the NFL Hall of Fame. I have better numbers than 15 to 20 of those guys. But I'm not going to lie to you. The Saints thing is so disappointing. And I tell Mickey to his face, and I tell all the rest of them, it's disappointing. And it's disappointing for my family. And, guys, let me tell you something. I've spent the last month or two, after they announced that Jari is going in, people look at me and said, well, Pat, what did you do? Why aren't they putting you on that wall? Everywhere I go. And, you know, guys, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it's not disappointing to me and my family. I earned that right. And not only me, Vaughn Johnson as well, but I'm the only defensive player of the year award guy that they've ever had in the history of the Saints. It makes no sense to me. And hey, man, I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed that Mickey and those guys haven't reached out and figured out, you know, how or when they're going to do it, because I deserve it. I worked my ass off for it. I'm not asking somebody to give me anything. My numbers speak for themselves.
The other thing, too, Pat, is as you miss a year not to get into Pro Football Hall of Fame, you got younger guys voting today. They probably never saw Pat Swilling play. That's the thing, you know, what we try to do here, you know, because Bob and I do it, Steve does it also, that we try to tell everybody about guys that played before, and you got younger people voting today that – never have really watched you play other than on film and saw how dominant you were in that time frame with the Saints. And I still don't get it. How you not in that, in those, in, on that Ring of Honor and Pro Football's Hall of Fame.
And I don't need the guys. And, you know, people keep telling me just wait, it's coming. But, you know, time keeps passing. And you're right. You've got a younger generation coming. And more, you know, those young writers don't know much about Pat Swilling. And, you know, they having to go back and pull up the, you know, old archives and take a look at it. But I'm hoping and praying. You know, this year I went from being, I guess what they call it, I guess now I'm in the old-timers market or old-timers bracket. So I made the 60. And I didn't make the 30 cut, so they got down to 30. And I'm just hoping through that avenue that sooner or later that I'll get into Pro Football Hall of Fame. But, hey, guys, the Saints Wall of Fame, I don't care what anybody says. I'm disappointed. My family's disappointed. It just doesn't make any sense. And, guys, you guys don't hear much from me. I'm not a guy who runs around here and talks about, you know, getting in this Hall of Fame or that one. But, you know, man, it means something to me. It means something to be up there along with Ricky Jackson and Willie Rolfe and those guys and some of the best players that played for the Saints. So, you know, I don't know, man. I don't know what to say anymore.
Pat, have you ever seen anybody that could do as many things that well? Taysom Hill. Oh, my God. Pat, I mean, we watching something. I know. At our ages, we've never seen a pro athlete do that many things that well on a pro football field. You might be able to do that in high school and a little bit of it in college. We're talking about the best of the best when you play in the NFL.
Hey, man, I'm not going to lie to you. When they started this whole project with Taysom Hill, I was like, oh, no, man, he can't run the ball. He can't do this. He can't do that. I sat there the other day at the Cleveland game, and I marveled at all the things that he did. I thought to myself, man, he's everywhere, and he's making plays. He's moving the sticks. My hat's off to him, man. I'm so proud of him and watching him and watching his growth. I was really concerned when they put him back at running back because I thought they might get him hurt. But man, he's played well. He's run the ball as good as anybody. Him and Kamara together are just great together. But hey, man, what a guy to have on our football team. He is quite a great athlete that can do all those things. It's just unbelievable to watch.
Pat, looking at the pass rush for this black and gold bunch, still needs a lot of work. I thought Jameis Winston in that game had way too much time to, you know, do what he wanted. What do you see from this D-line, and how can they, you know, get to that point where they're getting more pressure on these QBs, not even hitting home and getting the sacks, but it just doesn't even seem like they're getting anywhere close to putting that pressure on?
And I think what's going to have to happen, guys, is they're going to have to find a way to do a little bit more blitzing, bring five, bring six, bring some guys off the corner. You know, and I know they've been hurt so bad because, you know, as you watch them play, you know, they're just not getting there. And I think everybody thought that bringing in Chase, that he'd be able to be that guy. And unfortunately, he doesn't have the numbers and he just hadn't been able to get there. And, you know, without having that pass rush, it makes it difficult. And, you know, James had, 408 yards throwing the football? I mean, he threw the football well. They just couldn't stop anybody at Cleveland. But, you know, they're going to have to probably start bringing some more guys. And that's the only way you can generate that pressure if you can't get it with a four-man line.
Pat, what are the things that's changed from when you played till today? Man, I see all these linebackers today. They look like pumped-up free safeties. Now, you know, none of them are 6'3 and 235, 240. Every once in a while, you got one like that. But they're few and far between. And you see how the game has adapted in a lot of different ways to combat all this spread offense. We got to have somebody that can cover. So exactly. That puts a lot of pressure on that front. If they don't get a pressure points, all I can do is spread you out. And you know what I do if you get smaller? I run the damn ball on you.
Run the ball. I was about to say that. And that's the problem with it. That's why Kamara and these guys are running. I mean, they're running crazy now because these little safeties, I call them, you know, I sit there and I just look at them playing. I just can't believe that you can line up guys inside, even in today's game, at 225 pounds, and those guys play. I guess the downside of it, I get it, they got to be able to cover as well, but you're giving up the run. I think if someone ever really decides to put a football team together and run the football, just run it down someone's throat, you can do it any Sunday because the linebackers are so small. Hey, man, even some of these outside rush linebackers, I look at some of these guys. 225, 235 rushing the passer. I mean, it's a track meet. It's a track meet.
You know who thinks that he can do that at the NFL level? He doesn't have the talent maybe at some of the other spots, and he's winning. Jim Harbaugh. You know why Jim did that at Michigan? And, you know, look those linebackers he had in San Francisco. That was some mean cats out on that field when you hit the field with the 49ers. But he's doing that saying, you know what? All these little small guys on defense, I'm going to run the ball at them. Stop me. I dare you. And he's not going to give up running. I think, Pat, the biggest thing, you got coaches today. You gained 2 yards one play, 3 yards the next. We're not going to run the ball no more. Let's throw it. But they're willing to put up with a quarterback that'll throw two or three incompletions. But hey, they guys, don't want to give the run.
Well, listen, that's why these guys are 30 years old, 32 years old, 35-year-old head coaches. You know why? They sit up at night and watch these things on Nintendo, these guys, and these games, and they're designing how to throw the football. Most of them give up so quick on the run, they don't even give it a chance. That's why a running back's stock or value, there is no value anymore. There is no value. You don't need one. You can put a wide receiver back there and get it. But, hey, guys, I still think to win, and I may be wrong, and to win consistently, you got to be able to run the football, man.
With you, Pat. One thing, you know, I never bought that line that Jerry Jones said, oh, we couldn't afford, you know, the big man, Derrick Henry. Come on. You didn't want him on that team. Look, all the money you blow on everybody else, and you let him go to Baltimore. Now, again, Derrick Henry's 30 years old, but you get in front of him. Pat, they got more Ole moves in the NFL with these defensive backs trying to get out of his way than guys trying to tackle him. It goes to show that. And, man, I can't compare him to anybody over the last 10 or 12 years. Derrick Henry, a man that big and that fast. Because after a while, third and fourth quarter, you don't feel too great about standing up in that gap and taking him on one-on-one.
Man, he's a load. And I've watched him, and he's definitely a load. And, I wouldn't want to get in front of that cat. But then again, if I had my guys with me, I wouldn't mind. But I'm going to tell you something. He runs downhill all the time. And I am surprised that Jerry Jones and those guys passed on him, because it would have given them another weapon to help Dak out. Now, shoot, they're just struggling, you know, they're just not worth anything right now. But, hey, man, I love watching Derrick Henry run. And I think that's what you need. And I think at the end of the day, Baltimore's going to be in the middle of this thing, and it's because they have a running game. And it's going to bring them to a different level with having that guy back there.
We saw it, and nothing against Mike McDaniel and what he does with the Dolphins. Man, they go play on that cold weather field out in Kansas City. They were froze stiff because they want to throw the football all over the field. And I think if you build that team just on throwing the ball, little short passes, and then hit the deep one, in December and January, you're going to be playing in some inclement weather somewhere, and you're not built to win.
Exactly. That's why you need a Derrick Henry in that weather. And that's why I think Baltimore is going to be right in the middle of this thing at the end of the day. And it's because of having a running game and having a guy like that.
How proud are you, your Yellow Jackets, man? They beat Miami of Florida and Cam. Man, Miami, they'd live on the edge all year long. And I told that to Bob. Man, they're living on the edge each and every week. And Georgia Tech, man, they fed it to them all game long.
Exactly. And we went after those guys. And you know, when I talked to all the alumni and people back home about at Georgia Tech about that, you know, for some reason we have their number. I don't know if you guys know. If you look at the series, I think the series even though we're leading in that series, even when my boys were there and we didn't have much of anything, Trey and Bruce, I think we split with those 2-2 or 2. They beat us 3-2 as far as the games that we won against them. But we seem to play very well against Miami. I wasn't surprised by the win. I talked to Coach, and he was excited about it. He said, man, we're going to beat these guys. And we always find a way to beat them. I don't care if they're ranked number 1 or 21. We always find a way to beat Miami.
Pat, you're definitely in WWL's Ring of Honor. What you been up to lately?
Oh, man. Working and enjoying my grandkids. I got 6 of them now, and all under 4 years old, and I'm enjoying them. And, hey, just enjoying the family. And you know something? all the guys, Troy Cook and Ricky Jackson. Ricky Jackson, I had a birthday the other day, and Ricky Jackson bought me a birthday cake, and him and Bobby and about 20 guys came, and we sat down at A-Bears over there on Veterans, and hey, man, it's the most wonderful time I had. I told my wife, I got choked up. It was just good to see those guys, and they came out for my birthday. Ricky bought me a cake. Unbelievable. I said, Lord, he must be getting a little soft in his older age.
I was
going to
say, if Ricky paid for that, man.
I couldn't believe it. And, you know, we all enjoying each other. We all on, we get together on conversations on the phone. So there's about 30 guys that can chime in anytime. And just a minute ago, Brett Maxey, he missed this weekend, alumni weekend. He said, man, I miss y'all. So I told him, I said, man, quit being so mushy, you and Troy Cook. And somebody chimed in, Dalton Henderson, said, man, we love y'all. And I said, I love you guys, too. See, that's why we were good, man. That's why we were good when I played with those guys, man. We all loved each other. And that love still exists. And, you know, it's just good to be still a part of that.
Awesome. Always stuff. Great stuff hearing from you, Pat. Appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Pat. Appreciate
it. All right.
Member of the vaunted Dome Patrol, Pat Swilling, joining us there, the sack master.
He was a feared dude out on that field, man. And him and Ricky, okay, who are we going to block and who are we going to put extra people to block? And they kind of played off one another. And I thought that was so great to watch. And you have Vaughn and Sam in the middle. Good gracious. You're never going to see a four like that on one team. You know why? Can't afford it.
Right.
Not today's world. And even Mr. Finks decided, Pat, you were waxing a little bit too much.
Oh, yeah, we could ask him about the Lions, how they're doing so well right now.
Yeah, sending you to Detroit.
Anyway, we're going to take a break. Be right back with more of Sports Talk. Get into our Pick 6 segment. Charlie will give us the latest updates on how we're all doing. Taking a break and be right back on Sports Talk at the Treasure Chest Casino right after this. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Going to get into our Pick 6 segment. Just want to remind everybody, though, the big news coming out, not just for Louisiana, but nationally. Bryce Underwood flipping his commitment from LSU to Michigan. Wolverines putting up big bucks to get him to stay in the state.
Yeah, and again, we've heard it for the last 2-3 weeks that they were really putting a big press on him, and then Adam Scheffner broke the news just, I would guess, about 45 minutes to an hour ago. So
yeah,
that's a big loss for LSU because they were trying to keep that tradition of top quarterbacks coming into the program. And, Bryce – it looked as though he was going to stay with that commitment, and all of a sudden, bang, you get the flip today. And that's when it's hard. When you're recruiting a guy out of state, he's feeling a lot of pressure to stay home. And if the money's right, bang, and the money seemed to be pretty good there.
The hits keep coming for Brian Kelly.
Ooh, yeah.
Well, we're going to get into our Pick 6 segment now. Charlie, how did we fare this week, this past week?
Better. Better than, but it's, I mean, can only go up from the week before.
Yeah, right.
How bad can it get?
With 4-2, tied with Bobby, actually, who also went 4-2. Steve, you and I went 3-3, and that's what I get for picking the Commies over the Eagles. A little bit too much anti-American for my blood, guys, and that definitely bit me in the behind. So right now, we're standing at the records. I'm 34-32. Mike, you're 33-33. Bobby is at 29-37. And Steve, you're at 31-35. So I am hanging on to above 500. Mike, you're chasing my tail. I got to pick up some wins here. So we'll jump right into it, guys.
All right.
Week 13. We're going to start off with the top five matchup that everyone's kind of curious about. I don't think anyone's really excited, but they're all curious. Number 5, Indiana, and number 2, Ohio State. And the Buckeyes, you know, I did this on Tuesday, 12.5-point favorites at home over Indiana, undefeated Indiana. And this is where we're all going to find out, is Indiana legit? Are they for real? They played a soft schedule to this point. They're 10-0, top 5 team, but 12.5-point underdogs against Ohio State.
Yeah, I like Indiana. I don't think they're going to win the game, but I do have them with the 12.5 points. I'm going to take them in this matchup at Ohio State.
I was leaning toward Ohio State, and then they lost their starting center for the year.
Oh, and I'm like,
uh-oh.
That's your biggest stat right there, right?
Uh-oh. Give me Indiana in the points.
I heard that.
Come
side,
on, Charlie.
Yeah.
Come on, you got it. You got it.
I mean, so Mike, I was the same way with you. We talked about this on Tuesday. I was just like, half of me thinks that Ohio State just bullies this team, right? And that like they get blown out, and then all the conversation comes: is, does Indiana deserve a spot, even though they have a one loss on their record? at the same time, losing your center, we always talk about how important the center is, especially that important of a center who was, I think, just recently named to one of the offensive line trophies, the only center on that
Remington
list as well.
Award.
Yeah.
And also Jim Nagy was going to invite him to the Senior Bowl, and then bang, you know, in practice, man, that's what is a killer when you lose a guy like that in practice. And he really played well this year for the Buckeyes.
Yeah, Seth McLaughlin. And real quick, guys, it's Kurt Cignetti. I just want to give him some credit because I think there was the quote that he put out a couple weeks ago that he's won everywhere that he's been. And, I mean, he's not lying. This dude is a 129-35 record as a head coach in football. So I think Ohio State wins. And you know what? I'll do it. This is a bad pick by me because I know their center's out. But give me Ohio State to win by 13 or more points.
Ding, ding, ding. All right.
Up next, we got a top 20 matchup. Army at Notre Dame. Number 18, Army at number 6, Notre Dame. Notre Dame, 14.5-point favorites at home.
Notre Dame.
Yeah, it's a big number for me, but I'm going to take the Fighting Irish at home against Army.
This one's a clean sweep. I forgot to mention that Bobby's got Indiana, so I'm standing alone with the Buckeyes. This is a clean sweep. I'm with y'all on Notre Dame. I just saw what they did to Navy a few weeks back.
Right.
I feel like it's probably not going to be that bad, but it's going to be something a little bit similar. And then closing out college football week 13, Vanderbilt at LSU. The Tigers, 7.5-point favorites at home. Bobby's got LSU minus 7.5.
Yeah, the Tigers have burned me a ton this year. I don't like the way they're playing at all. I do think they win this matchup at 7.5 against a tough Vandy team. Give me the Doors in Baton Rouge. I might be a little nuts on this, though.
Give me Vandy in the points.
With both of you. So Bobby's standing alone with LSU here. I just don't like how LSU's been playing, and I think Vanderbilt's
No, for sure.
And you know what? Every time they count Vanderbilt out, they have to play a big game. And look what they did last week. They didn't play well against South Carolina. A lot of that got to do with South Carolina now. But, man, LSU, they seem to be a team with absolutely no confidence.
No, I'm with you. And I think that Vanderbilt could sneaky – like, once again, I kind of agree with you, Steve, that they probably win, but I don't know if they cover. This might be like a three-point game or something, like a field goal type of game.
Moving on, NFL, trust the Tigers.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see what happens. NFL Week 12, we got the 49ers at the Packers. Green Bay, 2.5-point favorites at home.
I'm going to go with the Pack at home, especially with news that Brock Purdy's not dealing with it, is dealing with a shoulder issue right now, too. Like the Pack in Lambeau, 2.5, pretty easy for me on this one.
Even with Brock Purdy healthy, give me the Packers.
I'm with you. The 49ers, you know, they've had such an up-and-down season. Their loss to the Seahawks is just like, it kind of culminated there, right?
Yeah.
Bobby's got the 49ers plus 2.5. I guess he thinks that they either win or keep it really tight. But give me the Packers here, minus 2.5. I agree with both of you. Moving on, Sunday Night Football, the Eagles at the Rams. Philadelphia, 2.5-point favorites on the road.
Man, the Rams, they are such a, you know, up and down team. Philadelphia's been on a roll. I'm going to take the Eagles in L.A., given that 2.5.
So Bobby also has the Eagles, and I'm also taking the Eagles. I agree with you, Steve. I think they're a more well-balanced team than the Rams. I do like the Rams' defensive line and their weapons at receiver. I do think that the Eagles get it done, though, with their rushing attack, and their DBs have been playing awesome recently.
Mike D had the sigh on this one.
Yeah, I thought about the Rams, but I got to go Eagles.
Clean
Come
sweep.
On. Yeah.
Sweep it up.
Clean sweep for the Eagles at the Rams. Congratulations, L.A., on Sunday Night Football. Moving on, we got Monday Night Football. The Ravens, 3-point favorites at the Chargers. Bobby's got the Chargers plus 3, and I agree with him. Because
yeah, Luke was just mentioning this matchup. We got brother versus brother on the sideline.
Yeah, Justin Herbert versus that pass defense for the Ravens. Just no bueno. Give me the Chargers plus 3 here.
I'm going to take the Ravens on the road in this matchup. Going to give it to the big brother in the matchup.
I'm going to go Chargers.
All right.
You know, the Ravens are so schizophrenic.
Very true.
Man, that's the worst type of team to bet on. That they all over the board. They got flaws, certainly in the secondary. The Ravens do. Man, if the Chargers had a better passing attack, I would say this would be easy. But
Herbert's been heating up, though.
Yeah,
I know what he's throwing
first,
to, though.
That first half against Cincinnati, that was as good as you could see. And then we saw the best of Joe Burrow in the second half. Man, two gunslingers going at it.
That is a wrap on our Pick 6 segment. Hopefully we get these matchups a little bit more correct. We seem to be on the more positive side after this week, Charlie, this last week.
We have a lot of the same picks, though, so we know what happened last time.
We know the one game everybody be watching, Indiana-Ohio State.
For sure.
You know, because that that's going to tell you a lot about both teams. And, you know, one thing with Cignetti, man, he's going to use that us against the world till he can't use it anymore.
We are going to take a break. When we get back, we'll close things out, headed to the top of the hour. But then at the after the news break, we're going to hear from Zach Nagy, who is a big-time recruiting analyst, talking LSU football and the big news coming out that Bryce Underwood has flipped and going to Michigan. Getting right back at it, coming back from the break here on WWL. Stay tuned. Closing out this hour of Sports Talk. When we get back, we're going to be talking some more about LSU's big news. Bryce Underwood flipping to Michigan with Zach Nagy. Also, the voice of the Tigers, Chris Blair, will join us. And after that, Felix Hainman, bass player for Zebra. What's up, everybody? It is November 11th. This Thursday, we're here at the Treasure Chest Casino, and plenty to talk about this hour. Not going to waste any time. I'm going to get right into it. Zach Nagy, publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated, joins us now. Zach, appreciate you joining us on Short Time. Massive news, obviously, going on right now.
Yeah, obviously, we're sitting here in the midst of number one quarterback in America, Bryce Underwood, backing off of his commitment to LSU. It's just one that's sending shockwaves across the college football scene, and I'm here to talk about it.
Zach, one of the things is when – I know you and I have talked about this over the last 2 or 3 weeks. There's rumors were out there, maybe a little over $2 million a year in the NIL deal. It looks to be probably – that's correct on what happened. We always felt that, man, it's hard sometimes when you have a hometown guy that he's going to leave – and go somewhere else. But the lineage, what LSU has done with quarterbacks, certainly had that road open for him. Now, with him flipping, what is plan B and C? Is it, do they have a prep quarterback that they would go after? Or will this change the philosophy and them try to get a transfer guy to come in? Because, man, this is late in the game, real late, if you're looking at a top prep quarterback.
Yeah, no doubt, Mike. And I think it's important to talk about the magnitude of losing a Bryce Underwood. Obviously, this is a program-changing prospect who has thrown life-changing money at his way. I mean, the Michigan Wolverines were throwing around an NIL package in the ballpark of $10.5 million over the course of 4 years. So, ultimately, he lives 30 minutes down the road from Ann Arbor. This is a guy who's from that area, has not visited unofficially or officially. The only visits that he's taken are to Baton Rouge to check in with LSU 3, 4, 5 times this year. Hasn't checked in with Michigan, but at the end of the day, money talks, and it did here in the grand scheme of things with Underwood. And now you look towards plan B, like you were alluding to, and is there a prep guy that they're looking at? Is there a transfer portal guy? And I can tell you that right now, there's not a prep guy, but you're going to have to hit that portal with force and see what guys you can get out there, because you got to go and get yourself another quarterback other than Nussmeier.
Okay, now I got to flip my money. Now I got to do what I got to do to keep Garrett. And we were talking about that earlier in the show. I know his dad don't have a lot of influence on him, and we saw what happened in the second year with Joe Burrow as a starter. We saw what happened the second year with Jaden Daniels. I would never tell somebody to go or stay, but the history tells you, you know, you need a little bit more experience there. And I think his dad, understanding the game, being a former NFL player and coaching at the collegiate NFL level, that may be the part where you maybe can flip your money and try to get him to come back for another season.
It's just about imperative that Garrett Nussmeier returns to Baton Rouge next season for the sake of this quarterback room and for the sake of himself as well. Mike, this is a guy who really, really can step up his game over the next couple of months. A player who was on first, second-round draft boards halfway through the season, obviously. It's not going in his direction as it is right now. But you talked about the jump that quarterbacks have made from year one to year two in the LSU system. Jaden Daniels, Joe Burrow. A lot of people believe Garrett Nussmeier can be up next in that category as well, as he continues developing, sheds that gunslinger narrative. He's a guy that you got to get back in Baton Rouge next season and keep him on that roster. He's the future of the program, and especially now that you lose a guy like Bryce Underwood, you got to flip that money, like you said, make the investment, and make sure Garrett Nussmeier returns to Baton Rouge for the second season as a starting quarterback.
You're looking at things now for Brian Kelly, obviously the program reeling after this. What does this mean for Kelly's future, if anything, at LSU? Do you think it puts this massive I mean, there's been a question mark. Does it now even become stamped?
No, he's going to be there, Zach. I mean, the money's too much. You can't buy him out.
No, you can't buy him out. I mean, you're hovering around a $60 million buyout. So you got him. You got him for the long haul, right? But now it's time to buckle in and start to get this roster intact. It's all about roster reconstruction for this program for the next couple of months, Mike. This is a very brutal hit, and the hits are going to keep coming. This is the first domino to fall from LSU, being Bryce Underwood, but there are other guys who are also going to back off their commitment and go elsewhere. So now it goes back to what Mike was saying a couple minutes ago. You flip your money, and you start to put it elsewhere in order to reconstruct this roster. Bryce Underwood's the first domino to fall. You'll lose another guy, and you got to continue to build up this roster for the long haul. So when it stands to Brian Kelly, this is a guy who is going to be here, but now it's time to, you know, pull up the pants, buckle them up, and let's go on ahead and try to do what we can do to make sure that this roster is intact for 2025 and for the long term as well.
Zach, they lost one over the weekend to an interior offensive lineman who flipped to Ole Miss, correct? And so he was the first. And then Underwood today. Now, I think you can get you an interior offensive lineman that's in the same kind of area code. The one thing with Bryce, he ain't going to get that area code. You way out of state if you're doing for that. But also, would now the target guy be Stewart at defensive line? Because, man, just looking at him on the hoof, man, he looks like what a defensive lineman should look like. And you got to keep that in-state guy in-state at a position that you are in desperate need of.
Yeah, no doubt. And the guy that they lost was Devin Harper, the number one interior offensive lineman in the state of Louisiana, ultimately flipped his pledge to Ole Miss. But now you got to go out and try to secure the number one defensive tackle in the state, and that's Jakeem Stewart. This is a guy who's really enjoying the recruiting process right now. He's officially visited Oregon, USC, LSU. Those are the three that are under his belt. He'll go take an unofficial to Oregon this upcoming weekend before wrapping up things on November 30th for an official visit with Ohio State. So once November 30th hits, he'll have wrapped up the recruiting process, officially visited four different programs, and then he's going to set to put pen to paper during the early signing period in December. LSU was a program that had a lot of momentum in this one. We'll see how that happens now with Bryce Underwood, with that news happening. Both of those guys took their official visits to LSU at the exact same time 2 weeks ago for the Alabama game. It'll be interesting to see how that kind of impacts his recruitment as a whole. But Jakeem Stewart's the guy that you got to roll out the Brinks truck for and make sure that you can try to get him in this 2025 class as well.
I bet Jakeem Stewart gets to meet Phil Knight over the weekend if he's going to Oregon.
Certainly say,
hey, Uncle great. Phil, how's it going? I know your check will clear. I'm not worried about that.
Zach, always appreciate your time.
Especially, I mean, that's the school that's really piqued his interest on the NIL front. It's kind of hard not to when you get a blank check handed to you and you got the opportunity to go suit up for the number one team in America right now. Dan Lanning's doing a fantastic job with that program. But for me, I think it's going to be LSU, Oregon, and then Ohio State. Those are going to be the three that really, really get his attention when it's time to put pen to paper. We'll see if LSU and Frank Wilson can lock things up. But I'll tell you what. Ohio State and Oregon are both swinging for the fences for Jakeem Stewart.
Zach, always great information. Thank you. And also, kudos for joining us on such short notice.
Thank you, Zach. Appreciate it, buddy.
Of course, guys. You have a good one.
Publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated. You can also follow him on Twitter at ZNaggy20. Zach Nagy giving us some great insights on the Bryce Underwood flip to Michigan. We'll be back talking with the voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair, as the Bayou Bengals get ready to host Vanderbilt. Coming back after the break here on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk at the Treasure Chest Casino. Happy to welcome in now Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Tigers. Chris, it never seems to be dull news around these parts, huh?
Yeah, I was told a long time ago, guys, when I got into this business, my first AD who hired me at Georgia Southern said, just remember, son, never a dull moment. And probably no truer words ever said.
Chris, has been a wild ride this season for the LSU football team where – you know, opening game, you had some opportunities there and kind of slipped away. And then and all of a sudden, this team built up some momentum and you were playing better on the defensive side, the football. And you know, you weren't running the ball well, but you putting points up, and you squeeze out a win against South Carolina, squeeze one out against Ole Miss. And you were saying, man, you know, Texas A&M a big game. And after what we saw in the first half, it was like, wow, this team got it rolling right. And it got derailed after that. And this team has lost so much momentum and confidence as a football team since that half, going into the second half against Texas A&M, and to see what's happened. I think it's between the ears now, to be honest with you, Chris.
Yeah, I tell you, I think there's something to that, Mike. I mean, you look back at this season, I don't know whether to compare it to a roller coaster or a Shakespearean play. I mean, it's ups, it's downs. I mean, the question early on in the season was, you know, can you run the ball? Because eventually teams are, you know, look, you're playing very good teams. They got great coaches, facilities, and student-athletes. I mean, if you only can do one thing offensively, I mean, most every team, certainly in the SEC, will work very hard to scheme up a defense to take that away from you. And, you know, I think some of that has kind of been the issue for LSU going back to that second half in Bryan College Station. The other part, again, maybe more of the head-scratcher, to your point about running the football. I mean, you know, in the Arkansas game, you didn't run it great, but you won that pretty handily, and you ran enough to keep them honest, and you still had a good day passing. Didn't run it so well against Texas A&M. Didn't run it very well against Alabama. But last week, you had a really good day, especially, you know, when the game was on the line. You were able to, for the most part, especially in the first three quarters, you know, stay on schedule, get to second and three, third and one, third and two, which, again, knowing what we know about this passing attack, that opens up the playbook. And for whatever reason, and I think some of it, as soon as I say that, Mike, I think some of it is teams now have really determined that there's no over-the-top threat. And they're really just basically saying, we're not worried about you getting behind us, and we're going to play real tight coverage in the intermediate passing zone. And, you know, give Florida credit. I mean, they got credited with six sacks in the game. They took one away. We left the game thinking there were seven, but on that fumble by Nussmeier and then the fumble back by Emory Jones, that was ruled not a sack, but six sacks. So give Florida credit. And, again, they tried to go deep a couple of times and just couldn't connect with Chris Hilton. But, yeah, I mean, it's been just when you think you've got it figured out, and you're heading in the right direction, something else slips. And I know that's frustrating for this coaching staff. And you could tell it listening to the players in their media session this week. It's frustrating for them as well.
Chris, the inability to punch it in the red zone, and we saw this early in the season, and now it's reared its ugly head again. Man, you look last week against Florida. They moved the football up and down the field. Looked at time of possession, looked at total yards, but they had to settle for field goals. And I think that's the frustrating part for most LSU fans I hear from. Man, we move the ball, but we can't score touchdowns once we get close. And that's got to be something Joe Sloan, Brian Kelly got to figure out for the next two games.
Yeah, no question. I mean, it was one of the weird games where, you know, you look at the stats. I was told also years ago that sometimes, son, the stats don't tell the game. Well, they certainly didn't on Saturday because LSU won time of possession. I mean, 92-43 snaps of the football, third down conversion rate, all of those things, as you said, between the 20s. And here's a stat that blew my mind. LSU had four drives of 12-plus plays. They've done that twice in the SEC era. And that goes back to 1932, Mike, as you well know. They had four 12-plus play drives, got one touchdown and three field goals. And that goes to, again, the frustration, the inability to finish those drives. And Coach Kelly said it, you know, minutes after the game in Gainesville. We didn't get any big plays in the passing game, minus the 28-yard touchdown to tie it up at 7-all. They got really three or four big plays, couple in the passing game and the one big run of 55 yards. And that was really the difference in the game. Everything else, LSU had it just the way they wanted it.
Vanderbilt and, you know, what Clark Lee has done there is just remarkable in how well they've played. Now, last week wasn't as successful, but they got caught in the buzzsaw. That Gamecock buzzsaw caught him last week. But what Diego Pave has done for that team, man, he's like a fighter. You knock him down, but you're not going to knock him out. He keeps you in the game, and their defense is what I would call quick, fast to get to the football. They're a very young team other than the secondary. That's where they've got some veteran guys at. And, man, you better get ready for a fight this coming Saturday, because they got a little bit of confidence. They can play with the top teams in the SEC. And if you look at what they did against Alabama and how LSU fared against Alabama, that don't stand up too well. But Vanderbilt, of all the teams, that's got to be the biggest surprise in the SEC, how competitive they've been all season long.
Yeah, I think, you know, credit goes to Clark Lee and his ability to really go find the right fits in the transfer portal. And it certainly starts with Diego Pavia. I mean, he's accounted for 20 touchdowns, 15 passing, only has 3 interceptions. He's got 5 rushing touchdowns. He leads the team in rushing. And as I like to say, it's also the moxie he plays with. And, you know, he kind of brings energy to everybody. I mean, just watch him. You can watch it on TV, and you can see the energy that he creates around his offense. And I think, it feeds to the entire team. And when you talk about Vanderbilt's defense, you know, and you look at their stats stacked up against the other SEC teams, there's no big number. I mean, they're kind of middle of the pack, bottom of the pack when it comes to some of the major statistical categories defensively. But the one that stands out to me, and I think this is why they've been successful with complementary football, is it's a team on offense that's converting third downs at 46%, but their defense is holding opponents to 42%. And that's why they have time of possession in their favor, and that's exactly how they beat Alabama. They never let Alabama, and they never let Jalen Milroe have the football. And, you know, I can't imagine it's going to be a different game plan if you're Clark Lee coming into Tiger Stadium. Oh, by the way, Vanderbilt hadn't been here since 2009. I imagine he wants to say, hey, look, let's just methodically run down the field and let's try to get LSU off schedule. Let's maybe get a little pressure on Nussmeier, make him maybe throw the ball off the back foot or spin his way out of the pocket into one of our defenders and get them in third and long situations and get them off the field. So, I mean, it's not rocket science. But without a doubt, I mean, they're trying to get their first winning season since 2013. And this is, I've said it all week, this isn't your daddy's Vanderbilt. This isn't your older brother's Vanderbilt. This is it's a really good team coming to Baton Rouge Saturday.
Chris, appreciate your time. Have a great call. 6:45 Saturday. We'll have it right here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Always great stuff. Thanks for coming, stopping by with us, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
Anytime, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, brother.
That was voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair. We're going to take a break, and when we return, do a little football and rock and roll talk. Felix Heyman, bass player and keyboardist for Zebra, will join us right after the break. Stay tuned here on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk here at the Treasure Chest Casino. Going to mix in a little rock and roll with some sports talk right now. Felix Heyman of Zebra joining us. Thanks so much for the time, Felix. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you guys?
Hey, Felix, it's Mike, man. Great. Man, I look forward to hearing you guys tomorrow night. And I was telling Steve, kind of tell us a little bit about most bands don't stay together 49 years, brother. And
no, that's for sure.
Man, I've been around guys after a year or a year and a half. Man, I hate playing with these guys. I'm off on my own with another band. So tell us the kind of road to success with the same three, you know, with Randy and also with Guy and yourself, 49 years. And do you have something planned special for next year that would make it 50?
Yes, we do. We have a record that we're going to be putting out in next year, and we're going to be doing some touring dates, and it's going to be an exciting year. We're going to do a lot of celebrating for the 50th anniversary.
I want to tell everybody tomorrow, and I think they still have tickets. They'll play Friday and Saturday night at the Fillmore, 8:00. Bobby J will be there Saturday, and I'll go tomorrow. You know, our wives don't want us there together because Felix, you know, might be combustible, so to speak, with both of us around there. But, man, hey, I don't have to go no farther with you. But my deal is, tell us, maybe not the venues in the United States, what's the best venue you've played at outside the country?
Well, you know, we haven't played outside the country that much. We've played in places like Puerto Rico. We played at the Bellas Arts Theater in Puerto Rico, and we were doing a show with Night Ranger at the time. And the funny thing about it was that it was sponsored by Gillette, and they were giving away free razor blades. So I thought that was kind of odd.
That's pretty good. Settle this up with me. Didn't you guys play at the Whiskey a Go-Go last year in California?
I don't know if it was last year, but it was recent. We played there three different times so far, probably in the past 5 or 6 years.
I was telling Steve, you know, he's a college boy from Jersey. He don't know nothing about the real world. Man, growing up, man, the Whiskey a Go-Go in California, man, that was big time. You know, you kind of grew up in the 70s and 80s. Man, that was the place you wanted to play. So what was that experience like? Because I know, man, Jim Morrison and the Doors played there.
I'm glad you mentioned that because we were playing there. It was either June of last year or June of 2022. And I had been looking some things up, and it was June of 2022, but in June of 1967, the name of the band was Them, which was Van Morrison's band, okay, that they did Gloria with, and the opening act was The Doors, 1967. That's nuts.
To think about it today, yeah, it really is. But how was it playing there for the first time when you went?
It's iconic to be able to play there. Like I said, and you have, you know, so many different people that have played there. You know, everybody's played there. Van Halen and, the Monkees played there. Everybody's played there. It's an amazing room. And it's got its own funky thing. It's almost like a French Quarter room, that room, the way it's designed and everything. It's got balconies. You know, the stage is really not that big, but the room just has a tremendous history being on Sunset Strip there and lasting for so long. It's amazing that any club could last that long.
The other thing, too, is, man, it kind of slipped my mind a little bit with this, is that you guys are big in the New York area, correct? In New York State.
Yes.
Okay, here's my deal. A Bayou band, and they big in New York State? Oh, man. Hey, listen, you hit the big time when that happens because not a lot of bands can say that you started down here, Bayou, New Orleans area, and you got a lot of gigs in New York State.
Correct. Well, what happened was, you know, when we were coming up, we were playing, we were watching a lot of bands that were getting big here in New Orleans, you know, and in Louisiana. But it seemed like, you know, nobody ever left here, you know, and we really wanted to try and stretch our legs and see if we could get a record deal. And the only place that you could do that at the time was either New York or in Los Angeles. So we had a couple of people that we knew in New York. We made a deal with them to go up there. We stayed up there for the first time about 3 months. You know, we saved up some money because we knew we weren't going to make the money we were going to make here. We wanted to try to, you know, make a dent. And that was in like 1977, 78. And then we played there. And then by 1980, we were like the number one band on Long Island. And, you know, we played the whole tri-state area, which means New York, Long Island, Connecticut, New Jersey up in there. And it really turned out to be a great set of circumstances for us. And then when we would come back to New Orleans, you know, because we were gone, it created a whole big buzz of coming back to the city, coming back to New Orleans, and then going back to New York. So it really worked out for us. And, you know, and by the extension of playing New York, it gave us a great audience in Florida because everybody's a snowbird in New York. It's pretty fun.
Great. How many gigs you got a year, average?
Well, it's been increasing recently. Probably about 100, somewhere up in there.
Man, that's a lot of travel time, brother. Be honest with you, that's a lot.
It's a lot of flying. Yeah, it's a lot of it's a lot of moves.
Okay, I'm gonna put it best. You and I, we ain't young no more. Okay, they wouldn't put a YOUNG by our names. But you got a lot of energy. No, you guys got a lot of energy. You got groups, guys in their 30s and 40s, they don't have that type of stamina to do that many gigs. And so, man, that's a great testimonial to you guys that you were able to keep it up and do it.
Well, the thing is that we never stopped. You know, even though we might have slowed down here and there, we never stopped. So we never stopped playing. We never lost our chops. you know, we always continued to play, whether, you know, we had a few dates or we had many dates, but we still played. So, you know, whenever you're playing, you still got to practice, you know, the whole, that's how you get to Carnegie Hall, right? Practice, practice, practice.
Felix, I know it's been a long time in the biz for you, but can you even reflect back and remember the first time you got to hear Zebra on the radio?
Yes, I'll tell you. Well, first of all, the first time I heard it was here in New Orleans, which was very exciting. And then we got to hear it in New York. But there's a story about St. Louis because, you know, we played in New York and in Louisiana for several years because we were together 8 years before we were ever signed to Atlantic in 1983. So we played it in St. Louis after the record was released, and they were playing at Keishi, playing Zebra, playing the first record in heavy rotation. And then so we get out there, and we're doing sound check. It was Six Flags over St. Louis. So after we finished doing the sound check, I said, well, you know what? I'm just going to go walk around, you know, to give you a little wristband. And so I go out there to go sign, you know, to go and take a walk around the park. And the next thing I know, I wind up, I walk straight into 100 people holding a record. And I'm like going, wow, this stuff works.
Wow, that's something else, man, to have that happen
that
for
exciting.
You. You got room for one more guy on stage? I think maybe Taysom Hill might take that job.
Oh, man, listen, Taysom could do anything, right? He's the Swiss Army knife. He could come up, maybe he could kick the bass drum or something.
No, listen, Felix, thanks so much for joining us tonight, man. We really
awesome
appreciate
stuff, yeah.
it. And again, tomorrow night and Saturday, 8 p.m. at the Fillmore. I think they still have a few tickets left. And, man, listen, you enjoy yourself. You're a certain age, man. Always remember Zebra from down here. I was telling Steve, first time I heard you guys in Thibodeau, 1977.
At the Spectrum?
That's it, baby. That's it.
That's right.
I was there.
He used to see us at Cutoff. He used to see us at the Lights Fantastic and Cutoff and maybe the Safari and Galliano.
Yeah, and I think y'all played at the Yellow Banana, too.
We may have.
I think so, because that's his gig. But, yeah, I remember those gigs out there. But, yeah, the Spectrum is the first time I remember seeing you. So that tells us we fairly close to Social Security age, so to speak.
That's for sure.
Felix, awesome stuff. Rock it out tomorrow. I know you guys are going to have a great time.
You know, I just got to tell y'all, you know, what's my luck? I come into town and the Saints are on a bye.
Yeah. Man, we could have fixed you up, man. We could have fixed you up with that. Hey, next time you come to town, Saints playing, hey, let me know. Well, I'll take care of that for you.
I will do that, man. I'm going to hold you to that one, Mike.
Oh, no, you ain't got to worry about that, brother. Thank you.
Appreciate your time, Felix.
Right,
have a good one.
I just want to say thanks, everybody in New Orleans. Thank you all so much. I'm looking forward to doing the shows.
Once again, Felix Heyman, bass player and keyboardist from Zebra, joining us. Awesome stuff there. We will take a break. When we get back, we're going to be closing things out here at the Treasure Chest Casino. Fun Thursday night football between the Pittsburgh Steelers and Cleveland Browns. Looking mighty ugly in Cleveland tonight. Should make for an interesting game. Be right back with more after this on WWL. Man, great stuff from Felix Heyman of Zebra. Thanks again for joining us. And Mikey D and Bobby Hebert are going to be chilling at the Fillmore. It's going to be very interesting. And I think it's funny you said back-to-back nights, not the same night, but Friday and Saturday, you guys kind of split it up. Who knows what happens when the Cannon and the Tillier are hanging out together? I know there's enough going on with the Mad Hatter's ball with you two.
Oh, yeah, we have a good time at Mad Hatter's. Well, we'll say that. But, you know, that was some other stuff in there, too, because of the fact Bob had an autograph session deal tomorrow.
Yeah.
So he could make it to Friday. And on Saturday, for me, I got
LSU. Busy, right.
I got LSU coverage, but we'd have probably made that work some kind of way, but they may have had two young ladies that got involved. Say, this ain't happening. The kaboom might have been there, you know, that nitroglycerin.
Obviously, the big news we've been talking about, Mike, Bryce Underwood flipping from LSU to Michigan. A pretty big shocking news considering leading up to it, it looked like he was pretty entrenched in with Baton Rouge and committed there, but in the end, obviously, money talks. We know that's the business.
Yeah, and again, he's committed. That don't mean he's signed.
Right.
Okay, they might have another chapter in all this when it's all said and done. Man, you never know about guys. And in talking to Coach O all those years, he was telling me, Mike, the hardest thing is when you get a big-time recruit from another state. They'll give you that commitment, but it's holding on to it
yeah.
until signing day. And now, you know, with NIL money and everything else that's out there, you can see the also to pressure to stay in state. That's a lot of pressure on a kid because guess what? Mom and dad still live in state. They got to stay here unless they're fixing to move into Louisiana. But those rumors had been out there for quite some time.
Thursday Night Football coming up next here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. I want to thank all the great staff here at Treasure Chest Casino. Always hospitable and
yeah,
a great
super
time.
Here. Super here. You got to come eat at the game and also, too, man, go place a bet or two. And, man, they got a lot of nice gaming, foods, fantastic, great people here.
Fans in the pro tomorrow with Mike Haas and Deuce McAllister. Sports talk rolling on. We'll get into Thursday Night Football right after this. So stay tuned on WWL.